Yep, I'm going to pull up just a few slides as a research person. I'm sure you're looking forward to them. And while I do that, I'll just kind of talk about the two goals that we had for this research, which is just provide a realistic picture of what the public thinks about HR1. So we anchored this research specifically about HR1. We felt like that was the most tangible thing to do research about at this point in time. And the second goal was just to see if we could find any message that would activate and persuade conservatives on this issue. And a little bit of a spoiler for the rest of my presentation, but it's very mixed results on that front. But I hope I can share some quick kind of do's and don'ts that we saw about mass public communications about this issue. So again, only two slides, but we condensed a lot of research into these two slides. So hopefully I can answer some questions in Q&A, and also people can reach out to Brian Hawkins from our side on this, who is kind of leading the charge on it. The first thing is simply that you have to understand that most people have never heard of the phrase HR1. So over 60% of people just had no idea what we were talking about when we said, "Have you ever heard of HR1?" However, when presented with a very neutral description of HR1, people were generally supportive. And the most worrisome part, which Grover mentioned at the very beginning of his presentation, is that conservatives were actually as supportive as the general public was when they read the neutral description of HR1. And so, as I have here in my don't slide, this isn't just a matter of like finding conservatives and then activating them on this in a public way. There's a large, very large chunk of conservatives who are supportive of these types of efforts. And so, everything that people just went through about the under the dome type strategies on this, we think makes a lot of sense simply because winning over public support for this is actually incredibly difficult. On that, the next two points, the next two parallel points, do's and don'ts, are probably the most important of this whole presentation, which is the way to engage with people on this is to engage in deep storytelling, where you have tons of examples of how this might negatively affect people. So we ran, a surface level messaging max diff exercise where we pitted messages against each other. And we also ran a few independent stories, right? So people could read through the stories and identify with a person. And identifying with a person and understanding what they were going through and how it negatively impacted them was so much more powerful and persuasive than kind of engaging in the surface level messaging war. And I'll get more into the stories that were successful at the end of this presentation, but this leads into the next point, the third kind of parallel point there, which is the don't on the side is don't get into a fight in HR1 where you engage with the other side where they have the talking points. HR1 stops billionaires from buying elections. Unfortunately, we found that is a winning message for both the general public and also conservatives. That simple message, but far and away, was resonated with people, and when they had to compare that message versus tons of other ones, they were most persuaded by that, and they found that to be most convincing and most, riled them up the most. However, if you do want to engage in this type of messaging, the one message that seemed actually to work, and I know this won't be intellectually satisfying to a lot of people on this call who really want to engage in this fight. The message that seemed to work, right, was simply that Congress shouldn't be focusing on this right now. Our country has much bigger fish to fry at this moment, which I think we can all agree with. And so the two examples we used were healthcare and the economy, right? There's still an unbelievable amount of people out of work in the country. Congress should focus on getting people back to work, not on, these kind of niche donor disclosure type of endeavors we're working on. Obviously, we don't have the luxury of maybe making that statement because we do need to refute the other side's point of view. But from a mass communications point of view, that is one of the most effective messages, actually. One ray of hope is that one of the other messages that did work with conservatives compared to the general public was simply that a diverse coalition of groups oppose HR1. So in our message example that we used the example of ACLU, Planned Parenthood, and conservative organizations backed by Charles Koch as an example of groups that oppose HR1. I think, you know, when you put that in front of people and they like, oh, conservatives and some liberal groups all oppose this, like, I should maybe think about this more. You know, there must be bigger implications to this if these groups are all coming together on it. That got conservatives to think about this pretty well. Some of the messages, again, that really surprisingly were at the bottom were, you know, if HR1 passes, it could lead to more political violence. You know, that wasn't persuasive. I think people thought maybe that was overblown, even though that is a concern that, you know, that we have. And then also that, you know, the surface message without a lot of context that HR1 silences the opposition was not helpful either. And then perhaps most sadly on the don'ts column here, the last number five, and this is a major reason we undertook this research, was just to simply test whether the phrase cancel culture could be attached to HR1 and using that to motivate the right would be helpful. Unfortunately, at least in, you know, our max diff exercise where we had messages against other messages, this concept of cancel culture didn't really resonate with people. So our, you know, our phrase was something very akin to HR1 is the left's attempt to use cancel culture to, you know, to cancel conservatives, something like that. And it really ranked in the bottom, obviously for the general public, but even for conservatives as well. And so that was definitely a little concerning to us. Finally, but I'll get into a little bit rosier picture here. You know, we did find that some of these more in-depth stories, and I'm happy to share them with people if they want them, were a little bit better at changing people's minds about this issue. And so we tested several. These were the top three that kind of were pretty successful. The first one we had was that, you know, if you make donor lists public, a small scale donor could be associated with another donor that, you know, that has a bad, you know, a bad public persona. And so it could really negatively impact a small scale donor because people would start associating them with this other nefarious donor. And, you know, that seemed to persuade people in the general public, not just conservatives, but also people in general public that is something to be concerned about. For conservatives specifically, we just tested an AOC message that, you know, she has shared publicly that she wants to hold people in the Trump administration accountable. What she means by that is unclear, and we were honest about that in the message. You know, it did, you know, move 0% of liberals as to be expected. And it moved about 31% of Republicans, to kind of change their point of view about HR1 when they were showing this kind of story about how HR or AOC wants to hold them accountable and that HR1 would allow her to do that a lot more easily. And then finally, another story that was kind of interesting that was also successful is, as I'm sure everyone on this call knows, you know, HR1, let's say a local neighborhood raised money for a certain cause, you know, of businesses in that neighborhood, such as Black Lives Matter. You know, if all these donor lists were made public about who donated money to a certain cause, especially in a small geographic area, it would be very apparent who gave money to a cause, but also who didn't give money to that cause. And that was kind of persuasive to people that, you know, some businesses might believe in the causes of like Black Lives Matter or others, but they maybe just didn't have the money at the moment to be able to give. Unfortunately, if HR1 passed, you know, their not giving would be made very apparent and very easily because donor privacy is no longer protected.